Matt loaded up two greeners and carried them in a sack of shells up to the doctor's office, giving them to Tom and Sam.
Just in case.
I have a hunch we'll need them. I think the town is going to be hit.
They're fools if they do.
They have no choice, Matt. It's an act of desperation. For men like J.B. Adams and Ben Connors and the other gunslingers, it's a matter of pride. For the kids of Bull and John, who knows what motivates them? You just get ready. It's going to be a long afternoon and an even longer night.
Next, Matt went into the marshal's office and took a six-gun from a desk drawer, checking the loads and filling up the last chamber. He tucked that behind his gun belt. He moved to the gun cabinet and took down a greener, breaking it open and loading it up with buckshot. He stuck a half dozen shells in his pocket. Van walked in and looked at him for a moment.
What's going on, Matt?
I got a bad feeling, Van, and I learned a long time ago to trust my hunches.
Van nodded his head and strapped on another gun belt. He took a rifle from the rack and checked it, adding a couple more rounds.
Proctor and a couple of hard cases drifted in about an hour ago. I don't like it, but I can't believe any bunch will try again to treat this town.
No, I don't think that either. That dozen or so buildings south of here. Is that the original town site?
No, Mormons built that town about 20 years ago. Then they deserted it and other folks moved in. Changed the name to Big Ugly. Isn't that a hell of a name for a town? Second bunch didn't last long either. Nobody's lived there in 10 years or so. Why?
I rode by there the other day, saw smoke.
Drifter, probably.
How much daylight you figure we have left?
Good 6 hours. It ain't a 20-minute ride down to Big Ugly. Take off if you've mind to. Hell, Matt, every man in this town is armed, most of the women, too. I've deputized the entire town. It's you them hired guns is after, I'm thinking.
You're right. But I don't want any more gunplay in this town, Van. I'll be down in the ghost town.
Matt, there's about 20 of them old boys. You don't stand a chance.
17, I think. Maybe 18.
Well, that's close to 20, the way I figure it.
Either make them come to me outside of town, or they'll come to town looking for me. And this time, some innocent people will get hurt. I don't want that on my conscience. Post guards at both ends of town. When they come looking, tell them where I am.
No way I can talk you out of this?
Nope.
Matt left the office and had the cook at the Mexican cafe fix him a couple of large sandwiches. He stopped Doc Blaine on the street and told him what he was going to do. He noticed that the doctor had once again strapped on his guns.
You give Sam a big dose of laudanum, Doc. Knock him out, all right? I don't want him to know what I'm doing.
Very well. What you're doing is foolish, but you're right about innocent people being hurt if all those gun hands come here. We've been very lucky up to now.
I'll see you when this is over.
Matt turned to walk away.
Matt?
Matt stopped and looked back at the doctor.
As you have no doubt noticed, I handle a gun pretty well. You want me to go along with you?
No. I don't think the whole bunch will show up. At least I'm hoping they won't. 1 against 18 is lousy odds.
Matt picketed his horse on a good graze by a stream and took his rifle, shotgun, and saddlebags. He walked across the meadow to the warping and rotting buildings of the old town. As he walked, he could detect the very faint odor of smoke.
I gotta get that drifter out of here if he hasn't already moved on.
Halfway across the meadow, Matt stopped and hunkered down as a strange feeling swept over him.
Something's wrong. Something's all out of whack here.
He remained motionless in the tall grass and watched as a man came out of a building in the ghost town and walked to a falling down old shed. Something about the man was very familiar, but at this distance, Matt could not make out any facial features, and the big floppy hat didn't help matters any. The man saw to his horse and returned to the shack. Matt still had no idea who it was, but he was carrying a rifle. Matt made his way to the town, staying low and using whatever cover he could find in the meadow. He stayed close to the rear of the buildings and began working his way toward the shack of the stranger. Matt edged closer. He tried to look inside, but the window glass was so dirty he could make out only a vague shape. He moved to the door and made up his mind. He had to do something, and time was running out for him. The hired guns would be here shortly. He pulled his .44 from leather and pushed open the door. Matt Bodine walked in. He and the man looked at each other, both of them startled, and one of them very puzzled.
You!
The man smiled, but his eyes were anything but friendly. He was not wearing a pistol, and the rifle was leaning up against a wall, too far away for him to reach.
In the flesh, Matt. You better close your mouth before a fly decides to take up residence in there. How you been?
Matt closed his mouth and holstered his pistol.
That's better.
Ralph Masters, what the hell is going on here?
I've been playing a game. Fun, isn't it?
Not particularly. And it's one I don't understand. Did you slip that note under my door?
Certainly.
You knew all along about Sutton and Carlin and Singer and Ledoux.
Oh, even before I came out here. Ledoux was my uncle, too.
Jesus. How many kids did that old man sire?
4. All illegitimate.
And you have the proof of that?
Oh, yes.
You're working with Ledoux?
Wrong, Bodine. He's working for me.
The voice was behind him, but Matt didn't have to turn around. The voice belonged to the old mountain man, Ledoux.
This here old Sharps will blow your backbone plumb out of your belly, Bodine. So keep your hands away from them guns.
In about an hour or less, this place will be filled up with hired guns.
Sure will. All working for us.
You don't have that kind of money.
They're working on speculation, Matt, for a bigger piece of the pie at the end of the road.
When Sutton and Carlin are dead, and you and Ledoux lay claim to all their holdings.
That's right. Of course, we'll have to kill the wives, but that'll be no problem. And the kids are already written out of the wills. Clever, huh?
Matt stood very still. Everything was wrapped up now, tied with a nice, neat bow. He even had a pretty good idea what the two men had planned for him. He had to make a play, but not with that big Sharps pointed at him. Lead from that Sharps would knock down a 2,000-pound buffalo.
So now what?
Ledoux moved slowly around to Matt's right side, staying out of reach.
Now we wait.
Wait for what?
The gunfighters are gonna start earning their keep.
I get it. I get to kill as many as possible.
By golly! Now you know we never thought of that.
I just bet you didn't.
Matt's gaze touched the rifle leaning against the wall.
Gates' rifle. You hired him and then you killed him, right?
No, we didn't hire him and we didn't kill him.
The Carlin and Sutton girls hired him to kill their brothers. Nice kids, ain't they?
How do you know all that?
Johnny Carlin told J.B. Adams that, and J.B. told us.
Who killed him?
This your back hay.
On orders from the kids?
Nah, it was personal. They didn't like each other.
What do you plan to do with Singer?
Those bodyguards he hired, they're working for us. That answer your question?
Few things still puzzle me.
Oh, well, feel free to ask by all means. I'm feeling magnanimous.
How are you going to claim any part of the estate?
From a long distance away, like New York City.
Slick. I'll give you that much. Very slick. When does Singer get a bullet?
All in good time.
You mind if I roll a smoke?
Go right ahead. It might be your last one.
Matt slowly rolled and licked and lit the cigarette. Neither man seemed to notice as he dropped the still-burning match to the floor in the middle of a pile of trash and paper. Within seconds, flames shot up. Startled, Ledoux shifted his eyes to the leaping flames just for an instant. Matt shot Ledoux, the slug doubling the man over. Masters scrambled frantically across the dirty floor for Gates' rifle. Matt plugged him twice, kicked the rifle out of the way, and stomped out the fire. He checked on Ledoux, and the man was cold dead. Then he knelt down beside the still alive and newfound brother to Singer, Sutton, and Carlin.
You don't have long, Masters. If you have anything to say, you better get it said.
You still lose. The gunfighters are on their way. They'll kill you.
No, they won't. Who'll pay them?
Some of the light seemed to leave the man's eyes. He shook his head slowly.
You never did suspect me, though, did you?
Of keeping things stirred up, yeah. Of being a brother, no.
Why in the hell did you have to come along, Bodine?
Just lucky, I guess.
Master's eyes rolled back and his head lolled to one side, and he slumped full length and dead to the dirty floor. Matt was waiting for the gunfighters when they rode into the ghost town. He held up one hand.
It's over, boys. You know that Bull and John won't rest until the debt is paid with their kids. Your employers, Ledoux and Masters, are dead in that shack. You want to take a look? Help yourselves.
Ben Connors turned to look at the others.
I don't hire my guns for free, boys. The paymasters are dead. You want to shoot it out with Bodine for free, you go right ahead. But you're damn fools if you do.
I'm with you, Ben.
Connors and J.B. Adams rode off without another look back. Slowly, the others followed. In a matter of only a few seconds, Matt Bodine stood alone in the weedy street of the old Idaho ghost town called Big Ugly. He fetched his horse and his saddlebags and sat on the boardwalk under part of an awning and ate his sandwiches, drinking coffee he'd found in the shack. The gunfighters headed back toward town, most of them hanging their guns on the saddle horn to show they were peaceful and were provisioning up and moving on. Those that still held hostile feelings toward the townspeople would head elsewhere. It wouldn't be long before someone would ride out to check on Matt. Just about an hour before dusk, Doc Blaine and several other townspeople and a couple of the smaller ranch owners rode out.
Matt, J.B. Adams says it's over, at least as far as he's concerned. He and about six more rode east. J.B., Ben Connors, Dick Yandel, Burl Golden, and a few I didn't know. They said there would always be another day. The others are camped outside of town. I don't know what they're up to.
Bull and John?
They're right behind us. They can't find their kids. But they did tangle with the scum the kids had hired. Van put those that survived the shootout in jail.
No idea where the kids are?
No. Bull thinks they've left the country. I hope so. I hope they never come back.
Singer?
He's alone now. His bodyguards left with JB and the others. That is one frightened man, Matt. He's sure that either Bull or John will kill him.
At least they'll damn sure give him a good ass-kicking.
So, it's over now?
No, not with the Carlin and Sutton kids still out there full of hate, and those gun slicks still hanging around. It isn't over yet, but it's getting there.
Matt had built a small fire and had moved the coffee pot from the shack outside. He had rounded up several cups.
Coffee's fresh and hot. Help yourselves.
John Carlin and Bull Sutton rode into the old ghost town, several of their hands with them.
That was a crazy stunt, boy. You against 17 or 18 gunslicks? I ought to take a belt to your backside. But I'm afraid you might take it away from me and use it on my own butt.
Van Dixon rode up and swung down. He was the first to notice Wilbur Gates' fancy rifle leaning up against one of the remaining awning support posts.
Where'd you get that, Matt?
Matt jerked his thumb toward the shack.
Off of the mastermind of this whole sorry bloody mess.
Doc Blaine, Van Dixon, Bull, and John stepped carefully up on the rotting boards, and Blaine pushed open the warped door. The men looked in, looked back at Matt, and shook their heads. Doc and the men walked back to the fire in the coffee pot, for with the gathering of shadows, the air was growing cool. No one spoke until those who wanted coffee had their cups filled and were sitting or squatting around the fire.
I don't know the whole story, but they told me a lot of it.
Matt told the men everything he had learned at gunpoint in the cabin.
So there were four brothers, but who was the man we buried?
Some drifter, probably. For sure we'll never know.
Did those two in yonder have a hand in turning our kids against us?
I can't answer that, John. I just don't know. You'll probably never know. Not unless your kids have a change of heart and level with you.
Not much chance of that happening, Matt. The girls are gone. All of them, except Connie. And I say good riddance.
The men drank their coffee, then Matt carefully put out the fire.
Well, somebody round up the horses of the dead men. We'll tie them across their saddles and head on back.
The men carried out Ledoux and put him belly down across his saddle and tied him down snug. Then the body of Ralph Masters, editor and owner of the Express, was carried out and tossed across the saddle and his hands tied firmly to his feet under the horse's belly. Van looked at the body of the newspaper man.
He shot that drifter in the face with a shotgun?
I guess so. I never got a chance to ask him. Or maybe Ledoux killed him. They probably gave the man some of Ralph's clothing, clothes that all the townspeople had seen him wearing many times, and then killed him.
But why did they kill the poor sot? That wasn't necessary. Their plan would have worked without killing some drifter.
I don't know all the answers, Bull. I wish I did. Maybe they were running scared. Sam and I started sticking our noses into the trouble, and we certainly stirred up a hornet's nest. Ralph asked me why in the hell we had to come along.
What'd you tell him?
I said we were just lucky, I guess.
All the men stood for a moment and looked at the lashed down bodies.
Lucky for all of us, but Master's luck just ran out.
That night, the citizens of Crossville lined the street lamp-lit boardwalks as the men rode in single file. They were all, men and women, heavily armed, and they stood silent as the men reined in and swung down. The undertaker and his helper removed the bodies and toted them off.
Matt, you don't think it's over, do you?
No, Bull. JB and Ben and a few like him, well, this is just a job to them. Nothing personal. But men like Yock and Philip McKay and Ramblin' Ed, this cuts against their grain. They've got to call me out to save face, but I won't be here. I'm going to stock up in the morning and head on back down to Big Ugly. I'll wait for them there.
You'll have men with you, Matt. That's firm. And we'll brook no arguments on the matter.
Who do you have in mind?
Me, John, and Doc Blaine. In case you don't know, and I'm sure you don't, only a few of us do, Doc Blaine was one of Mosby's raiders during the war between the states.
How in the hell did you find that out?
I snooped around, sawboned. Me and John will send word back to the wives that were staying in town. We'll provision up in the morning and head out. That suit you, Doc?
I'll be ready.
I'm going to see Sam and bring him up to date. And I'll meet you all over at the hotel for a steak.
I wish I was going with you.
I wish you were, too. When this is over, Sam, let's you and me think about heading back home and settling down.
I think it's time, brother. Of course, there's no guarantee that we'll stay there 12 months out of the year.
Matt and Sam shot the breeze instead of other people for a few minutes. Doc Blaine's nurse came in and shooed Matt out, giving him just enough time to say hello to Tom, who had just awakened.
Sam will fill you in, Tom. This mess is just about over.
Well, that just suits the hell out of me.
That night, after filling his belly full of steak and potatoes and apple pie, Matt rolled into bed and didn't wake up until 5 the next morning, when Bull Sutton hammered on his hotel room door. After breakfast, the men provisioned and headed out to the old town of Big Ugly. They rode heavily armed and with their jaws set in determination. Bull and John knew well that their sons might show up with the gunfighters. Both men had resigned themselves to that. John and Bull had left word for Miles Singer. Should he be in town when they got back, they would hang him. Singer was packed and gone by 8 o'clock that morning. Shortly before 10 o'clock, Paul Stewart, Simon Green, Dick Lauren, and a gunfighter called Buck came riding into town.
They're waiting for you down at the ghost town. You know where Big Ugly is?
We know. We'll have us beer and wait for our friends.
Yeah, I figured you'd all have to ride down there in a bunch.
The gun hands had noticed on their way in that everybody in town was armed, heavily. They dismounted, turned their backs to Van, and entered the Red Dog. When Ned Carey, Paul Brown, and Big Dan Parker came in next, Van just pointed to the saloon. Bob Goody, Ramblin' Ed Clark, and Bill Lowry didn't even have to ask directions. They reined up and walked right into the saloon. Jennings, Norman, and Chuck came in, followed by Yock Zapata and Philip Baquet. Proctor came in alone, followed by Donner, Nyburn, Chase Martin, and Blue Anderson, and more.
24. And if the Sutton Carlin brood throws in with that bunch, that'll make it 31-4. That, Tom, is pretty crappy odds.
I can drive a buggy with one hand if you can stand the ride.
I know where our clothes are hidden. All freshly laundered, too.
What are we waiting for?
You're not leaving me out of this. My gun arm ain't busted.
All right, Nate. Get out of bed and come on. You stay here in case Van needs some help. We'll roll your bed by this window and leave your rifle.
A young boy walked by the clinic, and Tom tapped on the window glass, startling the lad.
Go down to the livery and tell Ron I said to hitch us up a 2-seater buggy. Fill the back end with hay and bring it behind the clinic. Quickly, move, boy.
Bobby Dumas and Paul Mitchell riding in. Old ghost town is going to be crowded.
Doc Blaine had taped Sam's ribs tight, so as long as he didn't make any sudden moves, he was relatively free of pain. The wounded deputies hobbled, gimped, and limped out to the rear of Blaine's office, while the nurse hollered and squalled at them, threatening dire consequences, and got into the buggy, Sam in the hay-filled back. They headed for Big Ugly. The gun hands, gathered at the Red Dog and bellied up to the bar, did not see their departure. At the ghost town, the men were ready.
No telling how many there'll be, so we better play this by ear. As outnumbered as we'll be, this is not going to be face-to-face and draw. I can't imagine the gun hands even thinking it will be. We've all stashed spare pistols in the building, so just as soon as we see them coming, we'll head for our spots and let them open up the ball.
Who the hell is that coming?
It's a buggy.
Something tells me I know who it is.
You crazy fools!
Howdy, boys. Matt, you hide the buggy and team with your horses. And the rest of you help us down from here and get us into place. I don't think we've got much time.
Matt helped Sam down from the hay-filled rear of the buggy.
26 the last count.
Sam looked at the ranchers.
No sign of any of your kids.
They'll be along. You can bet they've had somebody watching the town.
Let's get set.
At the extreme south end of the town was what used to be the dry goods store. Sam was placed there. Bull took the saloon. John chose the old falling-down bank building. Tom was placed in the old saddle shop, almost directly across from Sam. Nate took a building catty-cornered from the bank. Blaine chose the old apothecary shop.
And you, Matt?
I'm gonna wander. I think I can be more effective that way. But I'll stay on the north side of town to avoid any confusion, as long as I can.
The men shook hands and took up positions. They didn't have to wait long. Matt was in the loft of the old livery stable when he spotted them.
Here they come. I guess a good 35 of them.
Any of our kids with them?
I think so. Yeah, I can make out Johnny and Hugh.
Sorry, selfish, greedy little crap heads.
The gang reined up several hundred yards from the silent old town.
They're waiting in ambush. We go riding in there hell-bent for leather, they'll blow half of us out of the saddle first thing.
Stash the horses and go in on foot. Take your rifles and stuff your pockets with cartridges.
Split up into four groups about the same size. Start working our way around the town, and at my yell, we'll attack.
Hell, there ain't but four of them. Let's just ride and shoot it out. It won't take long.
Yak Zapata glanced at the young man.
Go ahead. That way we can see where the men are waiting in ambush. We will say nice words over your grave.
Ross didn't think much of that idea at all. He shut his mouth and kept it closed. In the ghost town, the men waited patiently. They all knew that if they kept their heads about them and didn't jump the gun, they could cut the odds down by a full 1/4 at the first volley. The outlaws' gunfighters and disgruntled sons fanned out, slowly circling the town. The seven in the town waited. A few of the seven could have dropped some of those stalking them, but they waited until more showed themselves. Blue Anderson dismounted and carefully approached the back door of the apothecary shop. He stepped inside, where Doc Blaine was quickly deciding on a course of action. Blue was propelled backwards out of the door and fell to the ground, dead. And that kicked it off. Matt drilled a gun slick through the brisket and set him on the ground on his butt. John Carlin lifted his greener and blew a hole in Proctor big enough to stick a telegraph pole through. Marcel Carlin jumped into the old dry goods store and spotted Sam Two Wolves.
Goddamn breed!
Didn't hit a thing. Sam coolly turned and leveled a .44. Marcel was propelled backward out of the doorway. He lost one gun when he hit the ground, but started crawling away. He crawled across the alleyway and under the building occupied by Nate. Above Marcel, Nate waited, staring down through a hole in the rotting floor. Not spotting Nate, Marcel stuck his gun up through the hole. Marcel scurried like a big rat out from under the building. He crawled behind a dilapidated old outhouse and wrapped a handkerchief around his ruined right hand.
I never said this to my brothers. I wish I was back home. I wish I'd never tried to kill my little daddy.
Marcel froze in horror. The big rattler was holding on to the fleshy part of Marcel's hand. Arcel jumped up and went running across the meadow toward his horse, his heart pumping wildly. He made about 200 yards before he collapsed face down amid the wildflowers. Marcel fell on the Rattler's tail. Pissed the Rattler off, something fierce. Marcel died soon after.
Give this up, boys!
Hell with you! You're all gonna die right here! You hear me, Big John? I'm coming to kill you! I'm tired of living in your shadow!
You ain't gonna live in my shadow no more, Johnny.
Johnny! That was Paul who shot you! Paul did it! God damn you, Big John!
Oh my God. Dear God, forgive us for all the mistakes we've made with our kids. Paul! How much is your life worth, Paul? Sign your ranch over to us, Paul, and you can ride out! You got to be kidding!
Bull holstered his pistol and picked up his Winchester. He aimed at the side of the building where he figured Parker was. Big Dan Parker came staggering out, the front of his shirt, from neck to waist, bloody. He swayed for a moment, then fell on his face in the dirt and weeds. Two of those would-be toughs who came in with the Sutton Carlin kids made it back to their horses and lit a shuck out, heading for safer places.
You cowards!
It was Hugh Sutton who hollered. He half rose from behind a water barrel. Bull drilled him clean through. Randy emptied both his pistols at the old saloon building, hitting nothing but warped and rotting boards. Doc Blaine sighted him in. Doc blew one of Randy's knees into pebbles. The young man fell over and passed out on the boardwalk.
Insanity.
From the loft of the livery, Matt watched Yock Zapata inch his way behind the buildings on the east side of the old town. Matt lifted the .44-40 he'd taken from Ralph Masters. He plugged the half-Apache from 400 yards away. Yock stumbled around for a moment, and then, purely unintentionally, sat down in an old wooden chair and looked at the hole in his chest. Baquet looked from Yock Zapata's body to where Matt was, then dove for cover. He started inching his way from cover to cover, making his way toward Matt's loft. Matt watched his progress carefully, but he could get no clear shot. Baquet was being very cautious. The sound came from the ground floor. Matt left the opening and moved silently to the ladder. He looked down just as Simon Green looked up. Green had hired his gun out for the last time. Matt figured Baquet had probably made it to the barn by now. He moved silently to stand on several bales of old hay and was just in time, for Baquet started filling the old barn loft floor with bullet holes. Several shots hit the tightly bound bales, but did not penetrate.
Come on down and fight me, Bodine.
Matt held perfectly still.
You want me to come up, eh? Well, my mother raised no fools, Bodine.
Matt reloaded his rifle as quietly as possible.
I will let you safely down the ladder, Bodine.
The bales of hay again protected Matt. He stomped a foot on the loft flooring. Baquet bought the ruse. Matt saw the ladder tremble under the gunfighter's weight. He raised the already cocked rifle. Baquet's hat appeared. Just the hat. Matt didn't move.
I am glad you are dead, Bodine. I just bought that hat.
Baquet's head appeared. Matt did not have to look to see if he was dead. A .44-40 slug in the face at about 10 feet doesn't leave much room for doubt.
Riders coming!
Jesus Christ, there must be 100 of them!
Bring the town! No one gets out alive unless they want to surrender!
Pistols and rifles started hitting the ground, and men began leaving their positions and walking out into the street, their hands held high.
All right, all right! We yield! It's over! I'll be goddamn if we do!
Ross Sutton and Clement and Pete Carlin ran out into the street, guns blazing at the posse members. John and Bull lifted their rifles with tears in their eyes and sighted on their outlaw sons. It was finally over. Johnny Carlin and Randy Sutton lived through the fight. Randy's leg was amputated at the knee, and Johnny would spend months recovering from his stomach wound. Randy eventually went to college, and after that became a traveling tent preacher. Johnny drank himself to death. Marcel, Clement, and Pete Carlin, and Hugh and Ross Sutton were buried in the old cemetery of the ghost town, along with the bodies of the slain gunmen. Doc Blaine hung up his guns. Daniel Carlin and Connie Sutton were married shortly after the fight at Big Ugly. All of the hired guns were sentenced to long prison terms, vowing someday to kill Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. The daughters of Bull Sutton and John Carlin were never heard from again. If Petunia made it as an actress, she did it under a different name. Tom Riley was elected sheriff of the county, and Nat Perry was elected marshal of Crossville. Parley Davis became a full-time deputy sheriff. Van Dixon married Miss Charlotte. Miles Singer left town and dropped out of sight. John and Ginny and Bull and Roz adopted a whole orphanage of kids and proceeded to start life anew. As for Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves, the brothers tied their bedrolls behind the cantles of their saddles.
You look healthy enough to me.
I am healthy enough to throw you in the creek.
Don't try it. I'd hate to put you back in the hospital.
Where to this time?
Well, I believe we discussed going home.
I didn't think you took that very seriously.
Matt's grin widened.
That's what I thought.
Lawyer Sprague walked up.
Well, boys, what trail do you take now?
We were just talking about that.
And?
I guess we'll know when we get to the crossroads.
You got to settle down someday.
The Blood Brothers nodded in agreement, swung into the saddle, and both of them lifted a hand in farewell. They pointed the noses of their horses west and slowly rode out of town. Little Billy, his dog by his side, waved at the brothers. Matt and Sam returned the wave.
That makes it all worth it.
You are a hopeless romantic. But I suppose I shall have to tag along, watching you endlessly tilt at windmills.
Devil Creek Crossfire is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1993, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Dolores King-Williams, Johan Detweiler, Dan Smith, Karen Carbone, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Nathaniel Perry, Greg Reinfeld, and Temeskin Wubna. Graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. Additional original music by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed Devil Creek Crossfire, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man and Eagles series in graphic audio. Available at roadstops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
The First Mountain Man 2, Blood on the Divide.
Preacher ducked down and took shelter behind one of the wells the men had dug. He looked at the boy holding Hammer's reins.
Stay in the stable, lad. If you can shoot, there's a brace of pistols on the saddle.
You want me to shoot a man?
Forget it! Pilgrims, they're gonna be the death of me yet.
When Preacher chances upon a new settlement, just as the notorious Pardee brothers are about to attack it, A chain of events unfolds that puts the Mountain Man smack in the middle of a nefarious plot fashioned by human vultures, prey on innocent pilgrims. A plot Preacher will risk his life to destroy.
Get! God damn it! Go on! Ha! Go! Get!
Redborn Pardee and his brothers ran off bloated, carrion birds. The birds didn't go far from their snack. They waited and watched patiently. Malachi stood in the middle of the carnage and looked slowly all about him.
Never had a chance. Injun snuck up on him and finished him.
Something's wrong with this. I don't think this was done by Injuns.
How come you say that, Malachi? What else could it have been? Them's arrows, ain't they?
I know they're arrows, Henry. I can see that. But something's mighty wrong here. Mighty wrong. It's just, I can't put my finger on it.
Look at this. Them Injuns, if it was Injuns, was either drunk or it's a setup. A blind man can follow this trail.
Malachi nodded his head in agreement, thinking that he was very grateful to at least have one brother with sense enough to come in out of the rain.
What's all this scribbling on this here paper?
Malachi took the note from the branch and slowly read the words. His mouth dropped wide open. He balled up the note and threw it to the ground, then jumped up and down on it. It had been unsigned, but he knew who wrote it.
Nobody calls me a stupid son of a bitch! God damn that preacher!
Preacher?
Yeah, preacher. He read that note. I know it was him.
Now let's don't take no chances, Malachi. Let's call in the whole bunch and take off after him. We try to go this alone, and he'll pick us off one by one.
All right. Put out the call, brother. Sounded long. We got to get him before he gets us.
My name is Sutherland. Mr. Sutherland to you.
Your name might be Sutherland, but it'll be a cold day in hell before I call the likes of you, mister.
This bastard has burned us out and hunted us like wild animals. No more. I've taken all of this I'm going to take.
Dirk rolled from cover and dashed to the timber, running in a zigzag motion. Preacher held his fire and let him come on.
Dirk's right. I'm going up the other side of the hill. Ah!
Preacher put a ball through Lester's brisket that sent him rolling back down the slope. Preacher started a huge rock crashing down the hill. The horses bolted, running in all directions. The man jumped up and tried to grab the reins of his horse.
Don't miss one thrilling minute of frontier action in the first Mountain Man 2, Blood on the Divide.
The danger is real.
Can't breathe.
The threat is vast.
New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Dallas, Washington. We surrender or else millions of Americans die. That's what we face.
The conspiracy spreads.
We have every kind of creep and they're all in on this Hydra operation. With the information they've given us, we have identified bases in Nicaragua and Florida.
And the only thing that can stop it are the combined forces of Able Team, Phoenix Force, and Max Bolin. Stony Man. Go back to where the legend of Stony Man begins.
See? You got your backup, Carl.
Don't use my name, all right? Standard nicknames, fellas. Politician, gadgets.
And what's your name?
Iron Man. It's time to go to work.
December 2007.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.